Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Oh yes, I forgot that we're doing deep voices today.
Sexy voice day.
No, we were talking and...
I don't think I'd be able to keep it up for a full hour. Yeah.
We were testing audio levels and I was saying that I come across in a deeper register. I can't even do it now. Now that I've stopped, it's just like not a thing.
There's microphones that you attach to your body that actually pick up through the vibrations in your bones instead. Ooh. Like they use them in musicals and stuff if they need to hide a microphone. Mm-hmm. My voice sounds completely different on those.
Oh.
Because I'm such a large person. I'm a physically big boy that my my chest resonates a lot. So when you hear me on a microphone, I sound like high-pitched and nasally, like a Woody Allen character. I know what I am. But when you get the ones that go through, like, the...
It's like, my name is Sebastian.
Yeah, no. Because my chest is a gigantic echo chamber. So depending on the microphone you're using, like, my voice sounds completely different.
That is fair.
But that's true with everyone, really. But yeah, no, I know that I have a high-pitched, nasally, weedy, nerdy sounding kind of... accountant. I know.
So a few months ago, actually, it was when the budget came out.
Which
the
budget?
The federal budget. I want to say March.
Snow is still on the ground, but the sun does not go down at 2 p.m. that time of year.
Oh my God. The fact that I'm like, work is nowhere near finished yet. And it's still dark outside.
Yeah, the sun's going down. Yeah.
Owls are hooting. And
this is why I like February. As much as it is, I do like the fact that there's snow on the ground, but the sun is in the sky. February is a good month. I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, other people who are weak are not outside. So there's no crowds. And I like that.
This is true.
Yeah. But so the budget.
You can go about your business. So in March, cast your mind back to March. And we were talking about the great news that the federal government had announced funding to make secure LGBT buildings and protections and facilities.
Oh,
remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. I do.
It's the same money that's also available to make places of worship, like mosques and so on, secure.
Yes.
To help tackle hate crimes.
Yes.
So that was the idea. And we're like, this is really great news. And we haven't really heard anything about it since. Well, fast forward to just this past week or so. And Bill Minow, who is the MP for Toronto Centre, he is the finance minister.
Okay.
And he announced a recent big grant of just shy of $500,000,
mm-hmm,
that went to an organization for the purpose of identifying institutional and systemic barriers that lead to negative outcomes.
But what does that mean exactly?
So it's going to be research,
uh-huh,
on people who have experiences.
Okay.
And then a report and a plan for how to address those. And
but still, what does that mean?
This is good.
Well, it could be good if I could understand what it means. Because at this point in time, it's like we're going to study things that are not great.
Yeah, well, it's that they're planning to do a big consultation on folks who feel unsafe. So talking, you know, their fund was about creating spaces more safely. So what they want to know from LGBT folks is, are there places that you feel unsafe? What is it that makes you feel unsafe? And they're particularly looking at talking to folks who interact with the law. So they could be homeless,
mm-hmm,
they could have gone through the justice system,
mm-hmm,
and so on. So really get a broad sense of what the issues are.
Right.
And then come up with a plan to sort of narrow it down from there. And this sounds quite good. It'd be quite good to have this sort of research.
If it's executed properly. But yeah. I have a few misgivings. Not anything I disapprove of. I think it's a fantastic idea, but it's things
so
like...
So far, money to study to find out why people feel unsafe. Nothing here is disagreeable.
But there's things like, there are multiple definitions of safety. So are we talking about physically safe, that you're confident you won't be assaulted in the night? Is it psychologically safe, that you feel that you won't be traumatized? Is it socially safe, that you feel like your voice will be heard? Is it all of the above? Ideally, all of the above would be fantastic.
So,
but are
the action plan that results out of this will be looking at improving the relationship with the LGBT community and the criminal justice system.
Okay.
And I'll get to that in a moment.
So that's, again, that could be all three or just one of the three.
Increasing understanding of LGBT offending and victimization. So we're looking at hate crimes.
Okay.
And then also implementing an education and prevention tool for victims and offenders. So really they're looking at LGBT folks who commit crimes, LGBT folks who have had crimes committed against them,
right,
and really address it. Now, you might be thinking, this is still...
But still, I mean, it could get into...
on the vague side.
You could be a victim, you could be an LGBT person who is a victim of a crime that is not a hate crime. And so, this is one of the things we talk about often, the fact that there are people that use dating apps as a way to exploit people, to rob them, to break into their apartment. That... If you're studying only hate crimes, that's not going to get registered because that's not necessarily
Well, they're not studying just hate crimes. It's LGBT folks who are victims of crimes.
Well, that's
in
not,
which case
that's
got,
not
like,
super clear
is
from
it, is it, we're talking about fraud or, you know,
right.
being...
Identity theft.
Is
white
whole thing.
Is white collar crime involved in this?
I don't know. We don't know. But you know who... And this is really where the issue is.
Okay.
This is where people are taking ire. They're not worried about that it's so vague.
Yeah.
I think only you was an academic, like, oh.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, all of the above is fine. It's just if you got to clarify your terms if you want me to promote you. That's really what it comes down to. Because even if they are just studying white, you know, LGBT victims of white collar crime, as narrow as that is, that's fascinating.
Let's bear in mind that this was looking, it was released in Toronto.
Okay.
So, of course, we're looking at the Bruce MacArthur serial killing.
Right.
The impact that that's had on the community is incredibly substantial. We interviewed folks with the Southeast Asian community who will not report crimes to the police because they do not feel like they would even bother showing up.
Right.
So there is a major need for this kind of work in Toronto. So you're probably thinking, huh, who has been given this incredibly important work to do and $500,000 to do it with?
Right. Oh, I know where this story is going.
This is the people who on multiple occasions have lost the confidence of the community.
Yeah.
And are really, really good at throwing a party.
Yeah, so we're not talking about the Toronto International Film Festival, which is known for having some of the best parties in the world.
We're not talking about Inside Out either. They would be quite a good option. We're talking about something equally way out of left field.
Yeah.
And that's Pride Toronto.
Toronto Pride, yeah.
So the folks who do a festival are now the ones that I will be talking to people, not just in Toronto,
but
apparently
across
the whole country.
There are multiple organizations in Canada, academic, non-academic, contract, freelance, a whole bunch.
Yeah.
There's dozens that do third-party investigations into stuff that normally you'd get the government to do, but it's for when people don't necessarily trust the government. Like university departments, for example, for sure, there's various think tanks. There's a whole bunch of institutions where I've read something about crime in Canada and you read the back page and it's some something, something, something corporation, Inc. with the funding of the government. Like it's super common to do this. So, I mean, there are multiple organizations out there that... have done this sort of thing before, maybe not necessarily with the LGBT community, but definitely with Crime in Canada as a third-party agency, and why not them? It's just, the whole thing is bizarre.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, Egal Canada is Canada's preeminent national-level organization. They do hate crimes-based training with police.
Right.
Across the country.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing.
They already... But CCGSD, which we tend to pick a bone with, ostensibly also does work with organizations all over the country.
Right.
Fierté Canada Pride represents 112...
Well, that's what I was going to say.
All across the country.
If you're going to do...
Pride Toronto runs one festival.
If you were going to do any Pride organization, it would be Fierté Canada Pride. Because I think what they're thinking is Toronto Pride, they have connections, they know people... But if you're studying anything outside of Toronto, all of Toronto's connections are through Fierté Canada Pride.
Yeah. So why not Fierté Canada Pride?
If you're going to do like Fierté Canada Pride in conjunction with this third-party organization that are specialists in researching crime in Canada, I think that would actually be a pretty good partnership. I think that'd be a fantastic idea.
I believe that Toronto needs a lot of work and a lot of attention. Oh, the impact that Bruce MacArthur has had on the sense of safety in Toronto is incredible. Yep. And although I take issue with the Toronto organization having access to Lillooet or Cape Breton or Thunder Bay and being able to genuinely reach LGBT folks in those communities, I really question their capacity to do that.
Yeah.
But I understand that if there's a focus on Toronto as a result of Bruce MacArthur, then it starts to make a bit more sense.
Yeah.
But then it brings me all the way back to
why Pride?
Pride Toronto.
It's a volunteer organization.
And not only that, but Egal Canada is much better suited to it as an organization that does education work, does training with the police on hate crimes already, and is not a festival.
Do you know who else is internationally recognized and respected for their thoroughness, accuracy, and dignity in doing research in this kind of thing?
The 519?
No, I was going to say Stats Canada.
I get that.
I see what you're saying. Stats Canada has a 40-year, I think, history of being internationally recognized as being one of the best data gathering organizations in the world. And it's so, I don't know. This is nothing to besmirch Toronto Pride. I'm sure they're wonderful folks. It's really, the thing that we're making fun of is the qualifications, that these are not the ideal people. I'm sure they're lovely people and they are in the eye of the storm. But if you're talking about the skill set required to, like, all the criticisms I had right at the beginning about definitions and what are you actually studying and who are you talking to and that sort of thing. I don't doubt that Toronto Pride would get there eventually. It's just that other organizations would do that sort of thing right out of the gates and they'd be super clear. So when they ask people, like, do you feel safe in the following environment? They're going to be clear about what variety of safety they're talking about. Do you feel that you're going to be harmed? Do you feel that you're going to be triggered? Do you feel that you're going to be isolated or included? Like, there's different kinds of safety. And I would rather an organization that has that kind of thing on their radar. Because here's the thing, if people feel physically safe across Canada, like, let's say LGBT folks, like, this is a random thing, like, you know, that by and large, they don't feel like they're going to be assaulted in the streets, but they also feel by and large that they're not going to be accepted at their places of work or something like that. That's super relevant. That is something that should shape policy and shape the direction of different organizations, different service providers across Canada.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where, like, you know, dividing things down and getting accurate data, that, I mean, the whole point of this is to, you know, direct policy and direct social
and
programming.
Direct planning, yeah.
Planning, yeah.
There are so many issues here. It just compounded issues.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were taking the fact, taking issue with the fact that it was, first of all, that they run a festival.
I
can't quite wrap my head around that to begin with.
Yeah.
And then second of all, they are seen by folks in the community as now being in the pocket of the police.
Right.
So Now Magazine in Toronto, which is one of the only papers you can find in those bin thingies.
Yeah.
You know, they did an article just earlier in the week before this news was announced about the fact that Pride Toronto has reversed its decision and will allow police to march in the parade.
Okay.
And you're probably thinking, okay, I'm sure there was a well thought out process. And they said, yeah, we talked to them. They say they've improved.
Okay.
And everyone's like, okay, well, show me the proof.
Yeah.
We'll gladly review the evidence. But not only that, just last year, the membership of Pride Toronto, the people for whom the corporation work for, voted in to accept the demands of Black Lives Matter regarding the participation of police at Pride.
Right.
And then Pride Toronto has now decided to do a U-turn on that.
For any reason, or?
Because apparently the police have improved.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing that's
People are like, what the heck? Apparently from AIDS Committee of Toronto, its official response was disappointment.
Yes.
And the fact that this kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So not only are they now allowing Pride police in, within days they get 500,000 off the federal government.
So
it certainly raises questions.
The other thing that I have not seen anybody bring up so far. Probably somebody has. It's one thing to say it's really weird that Toronto Pride was offered this package, but it's another thing to say Toronto Pride accepted this package. But it's just so bizarre because it's, why did they say yes?
So folks in Toronto have raised many critiques of this.
It's
a festival that is now going into data entry and broad scientific analysis.
I think you texted me on Sunday or something like that. And you're like, have you seen this story? And I'm like, no. What? Yeah. And then I looked it up and I was like, no, no. And then you were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is, yeah.
They're calling into question the fact that Toronto Pride, despite clear direction from its own membership as the U-turns on the police, appears to have rolled over and is now getting massive checks off the federal government. People are very suspicious of this.
It's really now, bizarre, yeah.
Someone, when we reached out to our connections in the community and we said, you know, what are your thoughts on this? What are your takeaways on this conversation? And we did get some comments, some responses. One of the things that somebody said to me, and I believe they've worked before with Fierté Canada Pride and with other Pride organizations, is it is possible that they applied for the grant.
Okay.
And then they got the grant.
Okay.
Well, which is why I started off talking about the budget in March.
I guess that's fair.
We're like, maybe we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. And possibly it's just bad timing. And they actually did just genuinely get a big old grant of just shy of $500,000.
Well, that means that they were the least worst organization to apply.
Which is questionable.
Yeah.
Which begs the question, if
that's the case. Notice I said least worst and not best.
Why did Egal Canada not apply, or did they? Why did CCGSD not apply? Because I'm pretty sure they would have.
Yeah.
And why did the 519, the big, huge service center in Toronto, not apply? Mm. And that's just folks in Toronto. Why did Fierté Canada Pride, which works nationally, not apply?
Yeah.
You know, there are...
Or Stats Canada.
Or the Center for Conflict Resolution, you know, which operates nationally. I mean, it doesn't have to be LGBT. There are fantastic folks.
Or Randy Boissonneau's office.
Yeah, the LGBT Secretariat, which is located within the Privy Office. It's like, why did it go to a festival instead of any... The community is like, that is bizarre.
It's bizarre,
The timing of the fact that they do a U-turn, roll over, let the police come in the parade, despite a clear mandate from their own members.
Yeah.
And then days later, they get a big old check in the mail. I'm like...
Yeah.
it's questionable. It is very questionable. I mean, I don't know what to say. I'm stumped for words.
Yeah, no, it's... it's... So I've been involved in organizations before that have applied for grants, and I've been involved in organizations where we grant bursaries. I mean, I'm not anyone special enough, but I mean, I've been in organizations where we grant bursaries to local groups that want to participate in this, that, or the other thing. And sometimes there is an issue of choosing who's the best, and sometimes it's an issue of choosing who's the least worst. Like, we have money to give away. These 10 grossly underqualified people have applied for it. Which one are we the least embarrassed to give this money to? Okay, let's ask again, because these options are pretty embarrassing. All right, okay, we'll go with this one, because, you know, they did that nice thing 2 years ago, and that's good enough for us. So, I mean, I'm hoping that that's not what happened, that Toronto relative to the others, and God help us, whoever the others were, that Toronto was better than them. And again, this is not to besmirch Toronto. This is just, they're a festival.
Yeah.
You know, they run a beer garden.
Yeah.
And now they're going to do...
And a couple of stages.
Yeah.
What experience do they have? I can't understand. And it's not only...
Mm-hmm.
But when we start looking at the fact that, okay, maybe they want to look at Toronto, but they're claiming to be working with the whole of Canada.
Yeah.
What expertise? Do they speak French? How are they going to talk to folks in Quebec City and Montreal? You know, how...
Between the three territories, I think they acknowledge 18 official languages.
What's the Indigenous folks working on it?
Yeah.
It's like, it beggars belief.
Yeah.
One of the critiques that came up on Twitter when we were looking into this was saying about the fact that there are so many incredibly qualified and talented grassroots organizations that are fully connected to their communities. Now, we know that we mentioned Fierté Canada Pride and the 112 Pride organizations. In those 112 communities, those Pride organizations know pretty much anybody.
They're pretty... Well, yeah. Fierté Canada Pride would also be a very good option just because the urban-rural experience is very different. And you would want someone who's not just going to ask Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, call it a day. You know, you want to know what's up in Aurelia and Owen Sound and in
Powell River and
And it's good to know these things, right? And there's so many options here, and a lot of the things that worry me the most have to do with things like, well, are they going to acknowledge the urban rural divide? Are they going to acknowledge, you know? So you're going to need someone who's a little bit assertive,
really,
about being outreaching.
You need to be talking to the grassroots organizations these communities that are much better connected.
And they know who
much,
to speak
much
to,
better connected. We're in a position now where we're sort of demanding better of our organizations, and we're demanding better of... And last week I was talking about how we no longer accept things. And I think that there's... And I think that kind of carries over into this week, that we no longer accept the fact that, okay, this is great, lots of money, thank you very much, let's move on. And I will note that all of the mainstream media reported big old check and money, lovely story, everyone was happy, let's move on. The only critique and concern we've seen is from the actual LGBT community. In social media sharing, in Twitter responses and so on. But the mainstream media seems to have like read the press release and that is it. End of conversation. That irks me. But it's not just that. It's the fact that we're seeing folks in communities across Canada really demanding better. And I want to talk about PEI in just a few moments. But I think that we find ourselves in a position where maybe this is why Toronto has that reputation of thinking they're the center of the universe. And why the Liberals tend to get painted as a Toronto urban brush. This is not helping them one iota.
Not really, no.
And
no.
I understand Bruce MacArthur, Toronto was incredibly affected, and we have a lot of respect for that.
And there's
why a festival? So I mentioned PEI.
What's this? What is this?
So PEI elected a board.
Okay.
They were, for PEI Pride, they were most thoroughly unimpressed by what that board was doing.
Okay.
We don't have the details, but we know that they were going in the wrong direction. PEI was like, we don't agree with what you're doing. So they scrapped the board, chucked them all out, and they were like, we're going to do trustees. They're going to overhaul the whole of PEI Pride. And then we'll take it from there. We'll see what happens next. So they did. The trustees were like, we need to be way more transparent as a board, way more reflective of community, way more engaging with stakeholders. And they recreated a new board. And that's really the gist of the story. I mean, it's nowhere near Pride season yet, so we don't know what they're going to do. But they took pretty swift action.
But we're also not
to
sure
correct course
what the previous one was going to do. So I know that there's a lot more tailoring now, that there's a lot of festivals. Because I know I sat through this when I lived in Hamilton, seeing Hamilton Pride reform themselves. And I also sat through this, actually, as a board member of Ottawa Pride when we were going through this, where people were basically saying, we are not Toronto. We need to stop making a Pride festival that is just a smaller version of Toronto. That's dumb. We need to tailor the experience to this community, to this population, to this makeup, to this local ethnic diversity, religious diversity. We need to focus on what we can do, what local artists there are, what the local scene is, all that. You know, you got to focus more on what is the experience of being in your city and just stop imitating other major cities' prides. So, I mean, I know that there's a lot of that going on for sure across Canada as well, because some of the small town prides are like, we have to abandon the idea of imitating Toronto because there's like 20 of us, you know?
So I think what it boils down to is, there's a degree of trust. Pride festivals, and we've spoken about this many times, is an opportunity where for some folks, it is the first time they get to feel like themselves.
Right, yeah.
It is one of the only times of the year where Maybe they have the strength and the courage to walk through a street and be like, this is me and this is an important part of who I am.
Yeah.
And it's a time for banks and supermarkets to tell people they don't hate gay people. let's be honest, that seems to be one of the key things. Yeah. It's like, we march because we're not homophobic. And there is a degree of that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of trust. That's called
pinkwashing.
It's called pinkwashing. Yes. There is a degree of trust that the community has in those folks who step forward and step up to take a leadership role to do what's in the best interest of that community in making these decisions.
Yeah.
They don't always get them right.
Yeah.
Sometimes they get them horribly wrong.
Yes.
And I think that's what happened here, is that the folks in PEI were like, we don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You won't tell us what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, there is no transparency, and we have no idea what you're doing with the funds that come in, you know, either from sponsors or government grants. We don't know the exacts of their budget.
Okay.
Or even just donations. Like, they're entrusted with public funds. All prides are entrusted with public funds.
Yes, they are.
Donations and so on. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a standard. And they were just not transparent.
Okay.
They were like, we don't know what you're doing. And we don't like it.
One of the major sticking points that a lot of festivals need to figure out, and again, it's highly tailored, every community is going to have its own response to this, is that Pride festivals are at the same time an act of community building and an act of political activity. And political activity in the form of protests or political activity in the form of lobbying, like it looks different in every city. It's making a statement. It depends on what city, what era, that sort of thing. And finding a balance between the two. And sometimes you get small towns, you know, they're like, we might be able to attract 200 people. I don't know what we're going to be able to do in terms of political action. So let's do one political act and then like seven community building, because in small town prides, community building is often the main driving force. And I know one of the big complaints about Toronto a few years ago was that all the political activity, such as it was in protest of things that weren't happening anymore.
And in protest of pride.
Or failing to acknowledge new problems that they were not getting politically active about. Yeah. So
one of the biggest parades during pride is the anti-pride parade.
Yeah.
Which is usually by LGBT folks who are so annoyed at pride.
Well, partly because, on the other hand, the community building, they are doing community building for communities that are already built and not expanding that. And it's really, so I mean, I have no idea what happened in PEI, but I can guess that the community building activism balance is probably all out of whack.
You mentioned earlier it's a community and there's like 20 people. We've been to small communities where, you know, that year only 5 people step up and they're the ones in charge. And there's a lot of public trust in those 5 people.
But
communities struggle to find that balance.
I know I've told you this enough times that I'm pretty sure you should be able to remember. What is, in my memory, one of the best prides I've ever been to? Do you remember?
Oh, I forget. You tell me a lot.
It was Sarnia.
Okay, yeah.
Sarnia Pride. And it was 2001, 2002, I think? The B-Girls were there. If you were in Sarnia Pride and the B-Girls were there, you can message us and let us know. But I loved it. It was great. It was 100% focused on community building. And they did. I never went to so many Pride events where I genuinely felt welcome and included, and where people were like, who's that in the corner? No one's talking to them. And people go up to them and be like, I'm sorry, are you waiting for someone? Or are you by yourself? You're by yourself? Come join us. There was so much of that going on. It was lovely.
But I think this isn't really an issue with necessarily the Pride events. I think it's an issue with governance.
Oh, okay. Well,
it's an issue of people being accountable to their communities.
But that trickles down. If you have a board where...
Luckily, they caught it. They had their AGM in September. They were like, last week they had a special meeting, scrapped the board. I mean, less than 2 months. Like, that's a drastic takes a while to arrange a special meeting, so yeah. He must have clearly not been going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And he scrapped the board, brought in trustees, and now they've launched a new board, and this one is night and day. And the reason why I wanted to talk about PEI is because when you compare that
right.
to Pride Toronto,
oh yes, okay.
It's like, and I think yeah. this speaks to the fact that communities, big or small, expect their pride festivals to be accountable to their communities.
Yes, and to be appropriate to their communities. Absolutely. It needs to be tailored. There's things going on right now in Halifax and Vancouver that if I saw that happening in Toronto or Montreal, it would be confusing. Like, these are not to say that these aren't your issues, but you got bigger fish to fry and you need to focus on what is the experience of your community. For sure.
So we're going to jump to a very quick song by Partner. It's Lost My Pick, Can I Borrow One? And they are touring in Canada in the spring. They'll be in Winnipeg, Vancouver, and Victoria in the end of January, early February. I quite like Partner. They're hilarious. I think they've recently got a SOCAN award. They did that... Ellen Page song, if you recall.
That Ellen Page
song. It's about how lesbians look like Ellen Page.
Oh!
Yeah.
I do remember that song.
It's a very good song. Anyway, this is I Lost My Pick and I Borrow One, and we'll be back in just a few moments. Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
And we have another story for you. Now, we talked about
for
our general audience.
Oh, for the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello, listeners.
Yeah.
That's it.
I feel like, yeah, Twitter, say hi, @TalkCanQueer, on Facebook, Twitter, and the web. I'm going to start off with, and this is one of those, why is this a news segment. I need to make one of those, you know, like when you listen to news shows.
Have that jingle?
Like, have a special jingle. Why is this a news? So I'm going to tell you a story and then I'm going to be like, why is this a news? Maybe I'll get you to ask it. So there is a man going into a club in Winnipeg.
Right.
It's Winnipeg. It's in the winter. It's cold, as you can imagine. Yeah. There's a lineup. It is a very popular club.
Winnipeg is sometimes literally colder than the surface of the moon. With wind chill, obviously. After wind chill, not before wind chill, because that wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
Because the moon doesn't have an atmosphere.
That's true. It is 441 Main.
Okay.
It's the name of the club. It is a nice club. Lovely old building. And this guy is talking. He says things. We know he says the word gay.
Okay.
The bouncer, who is not deaf and is sober, was listening to said gentleman approaching and then says to gentleman, you have said homophobic things.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly what has been said.
Right.
But the sober bouncer has informed this gentleman that he has said homophobic things.
Right.
And they don't particularly want him in their establishment.
Okay.
So off your trot.
Right.
Why is this a news, you may ask?
Was it a gay bar?
No.
Oh! I'm guessing the gentleman in question did not go on his way after he was told no.
No, he was very much unimpressed.
Okay.
Very, very much unimpressed.
Okay.
And being of a millennial age, went onto the Instagram and published to all of his followers what can only be described as a tirade against gay people.
Okay.
And this is in Winnipeg.
All right.
But this is, we considered playing the videos, but they are not safe for broadcast. Like, it is very inappropriate.
Okie dokie.
Things such as, back in my grandmother's day, you could say whatever the heck you want. I can't believe we were discriminated against for saying a word. Gay people should be arrested because of where they put their genitalia. I am paraphrasing.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That literally was a crime for many years.
Right, yes, yes.
You know, and just really massive tirade against gay people.
Okay.
Across several videos. Like, this must have been going on for at least an hour.
Okay.
Like, he was just ranting. Thoroughly unimpressed. And, yeah, was definitely homophobic. Said on several occasions, I hate gay people.
Okay, okay.
So, yeah, pretty safe bet that, that he is homophobic.
I mean, bars, bouncers in specific, actually, have the right to deny entry to anyone they feel will make their establishment unsafe.
Yeah.
In general. It's mostly for people who have already tied one too many on and are out to get more.
Well, the next day, he even admitted himself he was drunk.
Okay.
So the bar, to all of its credit,
right,
released a statement the very next day, and I quote it here, at 441 Main, we pride ourselves on diversity and equality. We will continue to defend your rights, making our venue a safe place for everyone, because no matter who you are or whom you love, you are still human, and we welcome you, 441 Love. And they changed their light bulbs around the outside of the building to make a rainbow.
Aww.
And they were like, no.
Yeah.
Not only did they not let him in to begin with, but when he made an epic rant that has gone, I think even the local CTV.
Is it going to be like The Simpsons now, where they have his picture on the wall of like,
with a big cross through it?
Like, don't let this guy in.
Do not allow in, yeah. So he apologized the next day.
Okay, what did the...
So I'm not going to play it because, okay, I don't want to bias our listeners. If you want to go check out the videos, I'm sure he's not that hard to find. He says that, I know most of you have seen a video going around about me saying I hate gays. Just want to address that today. And sincerely apologize to everybody I offended. I take responsibility for my actions. And I'd like to apologize to security. I do not hate gays. Mm-hmm. I respect them and their choices. And I was drunk. And that's not an excuse. Now, if you watch the actual videos, the I hate gays is a very clear and consistent message.
There's also
that goes through there.
In vino veritas, you're staring at me. That's Latin for in wine there is truth. Drunk people, and yeah, they're actually, weirdly enough, there's scientific studies showing that drunk people are more truthful. So, I mean, it's yeah, I mean, granted, you've seen me gin drunk, mm-hmm, and I say some pretty horrible things about gays.
That's because you've...
There's a different tone when a gay man is complaining about his own people versus when, you know, the world in general, yeah, is being homophobic.
And this wasn't just the, oh my God, I hate gays, they're so annoying. It was like a visceral hate.
Okay.
And it wasn't just that. It was all of the context around it. They should be rounded up and arrested. We shouldn't be told what to do.
Right.
You know, back in the good old days, we could say what we want. And it was, if he was just saying it flippantly, I do not believe that all of the other remarks that, mm-hmm, were in and around it would have been there.
Well,
I don't believe his apology.
In defense, not necessarily his defense, just general defense. I don't even know what that means, but still. He still can say whatever the heck he wants. It's just now there's consequences.
Yeah, like he's not allowed in that bar. I'd be surprised if he can get into any bar after this.
Well, I mean, I don't think the entire city's going to put his picture next to the door, but, you know, just grow a beard, change your hair,
we've
learn to be polite.
We've reached out to some of the local LGBT radio programs out in Winnipeg to get a better of an understanding of how folks on the ground. Is a drunken rant like this something that commonly happens in Winnipeg? Are we seeing blatant homophobes on the street, or is this an anomaly?
Right.
We will hopefully have some content from you next week directly from the community in Winnipeg responding to this. So right. We're quite excited. We have a couple of different programmers looking into it over the next week or so. But yeah, clearly, if you are drunk and homophobic in a line to get in the bar and they say, go home, bro, you just go home, bro.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
Clearly, that's what that is. Now, I wanted to mention another Canadian story. Now, we mentioned this way back when, and we were talking about Jackie Chan's daughter.
Yes.
Etta Ng. And Etta Ng had married Andy Autumn. Andy Autumn, I believe, is Canadian.
Okay.
And they've just got married in Toronto. Now, I only bring this up because Etta and Andy made a big media presence known, felt, understood, claiming that they were receiving no support off of their parents, i.e. Jackie Chan,
right,
and that they were homophobic and that they were destitute and homeless in, I think, Vancouver at the time.
Okay.
If you do you recall when we talked about that?
Oh, that was a while ago. I'm not super clear.
Yeah, and then Jackie Chan was like, no, we've offered to help. Like, this is the acts of somebody in desperation, not willing to engage in a conversation. It was really much, it certainly painted a different picture from the, I am the estranged daughter of Jackie Chan who doesn't support me narrative that was being spun. Both Jackie Chan and the mother were like, no, we fully support you, but you like want nothing to do with us. So what are we going to do?
I was a little bit incredulous when I'd heard that because I'd seen so many interviews where people talk about what it's like working with Jackie Chan. So, I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, I guess so, I'll believe it for now, but I was a little bit incredulous. Is that them? Because there's a clear family resemblance there. That is a that is definitely a child of Jackie Chan. There's a very clear family resemblance there.
So they're actually moving to Hong Kong. That's where they've decided to go, which is unfortunate because Hong Kong just decided to reject civil unions in a pretty close vote of 27-24. A openly gay lawmaker, Raymond Chan, put the bill before the House, and it had a pretty split vote, but it did fail.
Right.
So they may well move to Hong Kong, but they may be recognized for a foreign marriage, but within Hong Kong, civil partnerships are not recognized.
Well, sometimes, you know, rights are won in baby steps. You know, all I can say is I encourage the people of Hong Kong to, you know, keep at it.
Yeah, I think what we'll really need to see is more effort coming in China to address LGBT rights. And I say this because the influence of the Chinese state and the Communist Party is very substantial.
For sure.
In Taiwan, there was massive gains at the recent election for the sort of pro-Chinese politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And China was seen to have won quite substantially in the Taiwanese election. And also, we spoke a little while ago about the fact that we were excited to see LGBT marriage not up in one referendum, but in three referendums in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the ones that would have allowed it failed, and the ones that would not allow it passed.
Oh, that's a bummer.
The ones they didn't pass substantively enough, but it was either way, same-sex marriage was rejected in Taiwan in the referendums. So it's all a bit.
Was it close enough that there's hope for the future, or was it like landslide new?
I mean, I don't think it was that much of a landslide, but what we saw was Taiwan shift closer to China. And that's what I was saying.
Right.
If we want to see movement on LGBT rights in Hong Kong, in Taiwan, we have to realistically see a bit of a cultural change in China as well.
Also, don't forget Macau and Singapore. that you have the four special administrative regions. Well, Taiwan's not really... China says that Taiwan's an SAR and Taiwan says that they're an independent country. It's messed up. But anyway, if those four move on something, mainland will move. And if mainland moves on something, those four quite often will move. So, I mean, there's sort of a relationship there. And hopefully, like, I wish more people would pay attention to Macau, for one.
We're going to jump to Ria May's Not at Peace, and it's a new track, and we'll be back just after this.
Holding my heart and it feels like hell. Holding my heart and I made it myself. Never knew love and I never knew how. Embarrassed that I let you walk away now. Oh, I'm alone. Should've known better. Wish I could forget her, but no. Lost in thoughts when I walk on the pavement. I'm losing tears when I sit in my basement. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. When they talk, I don't hear what they're saying. Thought I wanted this, but I was mistaken. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. Swear it's so quiet in this house tonight. I'm even missing the sound of our fights. If you were around, I would just make it right. I feel wrong by myself without you by my side. Oh, I'm alone. Should've known better. Wish I could forget her, but no. Lost in thoughts when I walk on the pavement. I'm losing tears when I sit in my basement. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. When they talk, I don't hear what they're saying. Thought I wanted this, but I was mistaken. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone. I was wrong. Wrong, that was love, I swear I didn't see it coming, that I would be the one that's hurting, lost in thoughts when I walk on the pavement, I'm losing tears when I sit in my basement, just going back, I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone, I'm not at peace with this piece of me gone, when they talk I don't hear what they say.
Welcome back to Cancrea, home of Canada's queer media. My name is weirdly still Luke Smith.
I am still Sebastian.
And you wanted to talk about
this. Yeah, we're going to break a rule. So we try not to tell too many stories about the United States just because there are so many stories. So unless it's something to do with fundamental human rights, we tend to gloss over it. But I decided today by fiat. And
well, it's not just we don't gloss over it. It's because if you want to find out about United States LGBT stories, there are half a dozen
websites out
decent
there.
Decent websites that you can go to.
Yeah.
If you want to know about what's happening in Seoul, South Korea.
A little bit harder to find, yeah. So I thought it would be a fun exception to tell individual stories so long as the term Florida Man shows up in the title.
Because they're hilarious.
They're usually hilarious. This time not so much, but it is a good reminder. So there was a story out of Florida where a gentleman had arranged a Tinder date, and it turned into a robbery. Now, this is an ongoing problem that people in the LGBT community, and I don't want to specifically say gay men, but gay men are slightly, well, apps that appeal to gay men are more targeted. And then how people identify when they're in those apps, that is a lot more colorful than just gay. But there is this ongoing problem over the past maybe 10-15 years since dating apps really properly took off of people using these apps as a tool for breaking an entry, for robbery, for identifying people for homophobic attacks. And this story is just a sort of a nice reminder that You should.
He was talking to him and he said, conversations got a little bit hot and heavy. Mm-hmm. I'll give you $50 for a little one-on-one time.
Right. Let's say.
So when they beat the living bejeebus out of him, they also demanded the $50.
Right.
Which I feel like would be an unsatisfactory transaction, it's, given the previous pretense.
I feel unsatisfactory is a bit of an understatement, but yeah. I agree with the sentiment. But it is a reminder of, you know, being careful and taking care of yourself and playing it safe when you're on these apps. You know, the usual rules, you know, the first time you meet somebody, meet in a public space, you know, don't. You know, if their picture doesn't match what they look like, then...
Even if you are offering $50 for a bit of one-on-one time, yeah. Let somebody know where you're going.
Exactly.
Let somebody know where you're going to be. Let somebody know how long you expect to take. Have your phone on or, you know, just it's personal security is super important.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And there's lots of organizations in Canada have little mini guides. If you go to whatever your local LGBT service center is, probably, chances are, somewhere on their website, they'll have like a checklist of how to keep yourself safe when you're on a date off of, you know, Grindr or any of the other services. And I know we've seen them from Vancouver. I'm pretty sure we saw one from Edmonton, I think. I've seen them out of Toronto. I've seen them out of Montreal. So, I mean, definitely it's a extra 2 minutes of double checking and letting somebody know to make sure that you're safe. And I definitely encourage everyone to be smart. Meet as many people as your heart and as your body fluids permit you to do so, but do so safely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wanted to offer a couple of quick updates on some international stories before we move on to the end of the show. New update. On Tanzania.
Oh, okay.
So the president of Tanzania was apparently not super thrilled about Denmark's decision to not give money to a country that threatens to round up gay people.
Right, yes.
And we were like, well done, Denmark, sticking to your guns.
That seems about
and
right.
And they said, you know what? China, so much easier to deal with. Because they just give you money and there's no repercussions.
That's not always true.
So they have decided that China is way better than the West because China doesn't demand any accountability for example, the regional governor of Dar es Salaam.
Yeah, but over the past 10 years, China's started becoming more and more interested in international human rights.
Well, it's in at the very least in its reputation.
Yeah.
And the appearance. But Chinese money, in terms of loans and investments, typically do not come with rights with obligations attached. Now, Denmark pulled it. The World Bank has frozen its loan on education, mainly because Tanzania threatened to expel pregnant girls. And they were like, well, we're not going to give you money to educate girls if you're kicking them out.
Yeah.
So fix that.
Right.
And we haven't quite heard from the Canadian government yet as to what their next steps are, but we will follow up.
Essentially,
clearly it's having an effect because Tanzania is like, well, we'll just go to China. Well, that's all we've got time for.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, we've run out of time.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian.
We're playing out with the Pixies and Where Is My Mind?
Thank you for listening.